My grandmother's body had far outlived her mind's usefulness. After a decade with dementia, 6 years of which were spent in a nursing home, it was past time for my grandmother to die. In fact, she would have hated the last years of her life. A librarian by profession, the thought of losing her mind would have horrified my grandmother. The only blessing of her dementia was that she had little recognition of the terrible mental state that she was in, and this was a blessing. As soft and thick as velvet, a fog drifted into her mind and clouded it to the point of obscurity. My mother and father were the last people she actually recognized. She even forgot who they were during her last year of life. She would say to any of us when we visited, "Now I don't remember who you are, but thank you for coming to visit me." At the end, my grandmother was a little shell of a woman who spent most of every day sleeping like an infant in her bed. When she finally let go of her life on September 4th, 2009, her family was relieved. As I stood in the pulpit of my home church in Deer Lodge, Montana, and relayed some memories I have of my grandmother during her funeral, I was keenly aware of how it is as important to mention some of her shortcomings as it was to laud her accomplishments. She was a whole person, after all, just like you, just like me. She had good qualities and bad ones. She could be both selfish and generous, both loving and spiteful. Amid the laughter about some of the funny things my grandmother did, when there were also tears shed for some of the pain that she had caused. Warm memories and raw ones. Noble actions and ignoble ones. There was no sense in glossing over the hard places just to make everyone feel comfortable. But it might not have been that way. As my grandmother was dying, I asked my mother if three of my cousins would be coming to the funeral. My mother admitted that these cousins didn't know Grandma's death was close at hand. My mother and my aunt had discussed telling them and had decided that it would be best if they did not know until a few weeks after the funeral. After all, they had not been in contact with Grandma for years. They had not visited her in the nursing home, and therefore, they didn't really deserve to be told about her death. After taking a deep breath, I calmly and clearly explained to my mother why she and my aunt had to tell my cousins about Grandma's death. I told her that she did not have the right to withhold this information from them. When she protested that they probably would not come to the funeral anyway, I had to explain that this was their choice. Whether they chose to come or not was up to them. But she had to tell them either way. Begrudgingly, my mother said she would discuss it with her sister. Now, sometimes it's good to have a minister in the family. In ethical matters, I carry a little more weight by being clergy. When I talked to my mother a day later, she just dropped into the conversation that my three cousins were planning to come to the funeral after all. Without yelling, "I told you so!" I smiled to myself and knew that this family gathering was going to turn out better than expected. Simply getting my mother, my aunt, and the rest of the family in the same place would be healing for all, and so it was. When the estranged cousins drove up to the church, both my mother and aunt went over and greeted them warmly. Hands that hadn't touched in 15 years reached out in embrace. Eyes that hadn't seen one another in a long, long time looked at each other in love. Forgiveness was immediate. Reconnection had been established. Everyone would go on from that point. The message of today's service is simple, yet very radical in our culture. We are human, we make mistakes, we injure others, and others make mistakes that injure us. We must learn to forgive and to be forgiven. Nothing is more important to a peaceful life than to be in right relationship with others and with ourselves, but we forget this. We forget it all the time. We forget how to look beyond the day-to-day needs and worries of our lives. We forget to slow down enough to be humane to those around us. We lose sight of our connectedness to all. This week marks the Jewish High Holy Days. First Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and then Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And as they have for thousands of years, Jews will fast, pray, and attend temple services. They will look into their hearts and make amends. They will vow to do better in the coming year. They will emerge from these days of awe with a feeling of newness. This newness holds wonderful possibilities for the coming year. It removes the burden of past missteps. And what about us? What might we atone for? From what mistakes might we be redeemed? Just last week, a church member, one of you, asked for an appointment with me to talk about something that had been troubling her. I agreed. I also got her permission to share the content of our conversation with you this morning. After some back and forth, trying to make two crowded schedules match enough for a meeting, we found ourselves face to face in my office. She was doing her best to be brave. I was doing my best to not be defensive. This kind, sincere young mother explained how dismayed she had been by a sermon I had preached back in June. She told me that it had made her want to leave the sanctuary that morning when she heard it. And she was even more surprised to hear other people applaud the sermon at its conclusion. Was she wrong about her feelings, she wondered? Was she out of step with the rest of the congregation? And would she get anything more from me than an argument about why I was right and she was wrong? But after months of carrying this sermon around in her head, she had worked up the courage to meet with me and talk about it. Of course, I had not forgotten the sermon either, and had secretly hoped it would never come up again. You see, I get some things completely wrong sometimes. I make mistakes, some of them quite publicly. And I occasionally preach a sermon that I'm not proud of afterwards. As this woman began to explain what didn't work for her in the sermon, I felt the shame of knowing that she was right. In the kindest way possible, she explained that my words had felt judgmental. To her, the sermon trafficked in black and white thinking. It did not leave any room for nuance. She felt it came from a place of me versus you rather than a place of us. It was a scolding sermon, and she had felt quite hurt by it. Ouch. I knew she was right. I was not in a good place when I wrote that sermon, and at some level I had hoped that I had gotten away with it. I'd hoped that the congregation wouldn't notice the harsh preacher, or would at least excuse away my words or simply ignore me. As the minutes ticked by in my office, I tried as hard as I could to listen well and to not make excuses. We kept talking for about 45 minutes. This was no quick fix. I apologized for my words. I told her I was sorry my sermon had hurt her. We both smiled and laughed a little bit at my mistake. And we both agreed that it was better to talk about something painful than to just let it go on wounding either of us. We ended the appointment with a brief hug and went our separate ways with lighter hearts. Redemption is possible anywhere, but it eludes us. Because redemption requires us to see the person in front of us, it can easily be avoided or put off. We can make lots of excuses for our behaviors. We can justify almost any action if we try hard enough. But to enter into a redemptive conversation requires us to be both brave and kind. As I talked with a church member who was upset by my sermon, I had to manage my own feelings in order to hear hers. We talked about the ways in which I have struggled to adjust both to First Parish in Concord and to living in this area. We talked about what it was like for me to leave a congregation I loved deeply, to come to one that was entirely unknown. We talked about how hard it is to start over in a new place with all of its pressures and expectations. We talked about what it might take for me to feel like one of us. And we talked about furniture and fashion. To be the senior minister at First Parish in Concord is to have authority. It is to stand in a long line of ministers who have served this congregation for many generations, whose portraits gaze upon us all in the parish hall. Add a high, imposing pulpit and a long black robe, and I become an authority figure. An authority figure on a very high pedestal. This pulpit is a place of power, power that can be abused and feared if I am not careful. I always notice how many people actually tremble when they come up here to speak. I see them visibly shake on this spot. I tremble myself. I tremble because I know people will listen to what I say. They will consider me an expert on whatever I am talking about, and they will feel either included or put off by what I say. Words from this place have power. For us, turning does not come easily, we said in our responsive reading. It takes an act of will for us to make a turn. It means breaking with old habits. It means admitting that we have been wrong, and this is never easy. It means losing face. It means starting over again, and this is always painful. But unless we turn, we will be trapped forever in yesterday's ways. I wonder how we all might be gentler with one another in this new year. I wonder how I might be more patient with things moving at the speed of church. I wonder how I might carry my own authority more lightly, looking less like the big bad wolf to some of you, and more like the caring minister that I intend to be. And I wonder how you might let me down off of this very high pedestal that I find myself on. I wonder how you might judge me less on what I say and more on the forward progress that we are all making together. In the 4 years that we have been together, we have accomplished some wonderful things. I feel far less anxiety here than when I arrived. I see much more kindness among you. New people are eager to join us. Money is no longer a problem. Trust is growing. And if we can forgive each other when we mess up, what amazing things we might be able to do together. What amazing things we might be able to do together if we can leave grudges behind and move ahead redeemed. God, help us to turn, we prayed. Turn from callousness to sensitivity, from hostility to love, from pettiness to purpose, from envy to contentment, from carelessness to discipline, from fear to faith. As we join in heart and purpose with our Jewish friends during these days of awe, let this be our prayer. And let us go on into this beautiful new year together. So be it. Amen.